Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I wonder if Anthony Lima still feels that way. I wonder if he still feels as if that guy in Columbus should be fired. I wonder if that is still what his point of view on this entire situation with Ohio State is after a 41-21 win in the Rose Bowl over the Oregon Ducks to advance to the semifinals against Texas coming up on January 10th. I wonder how many Ohio State fans still feel, because, listen, he was not alone in thinking that Ryan Day should be fired. There were a lot of fans that felt that way. One of them is raising his hands right now across the room from me. But I wonder how many fans still feel that way, because I know that that was a popular take, and I understand why that take was as popular as it was.
Better be Texas. That's all I'm saying.
Better be Texas.
Better be Texas.
You think he should be fired if they don't beat Texas?
I don't know. Let's see how it goes.
Well, let's see what Anthony Lima has to say about that, because he couldn't stay off the show, even though it's his day off. He just had takes he needed to get off. Anthony, should Ohio State still fire Ryan Day?
No, it's contract extension time. We got to start trying to figure out how long he stays. As long as you guarantee me we get Chip Kelly, we get the whole gang back together, we get $20 million is not going to be enough now. I mean, Jeremiah Smith alone could probably command $7, $8, $9, $10 million. I mean, what's Oregon going to offer him after this year? So it raises the stakes a little bit, but things have gotten really interesting. I don't think any of us know how to operate in this world, which I think you guys have been touching on all morning.
And Anthony Lima joins us now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline, even though he's normally on the show. His name's on the show, but he's sitting at home talking about Ohio State with us right now. And I do think that the one thing that really is interesting about this is, one, I don't know that I truly believe they would win the national championship until watching them play yesterday. And I also now truly believe that that Michigan game is never going to matter the way that it mattered before.
To me, guys, as somebody who had an all-time meltdown on social media and the next week's worth or 2 weeks' worth of radio shows on this very platform, I think it's a lot complicated. It's something that, you know, I was warned about. I mean, people said, guys, it really doesn't matter. They're going to the playoff. And I'm like, yeah, but that team that we just saw get, what, one first down in the fourth quarter against Michigan and could only muster 10 points with all that money. Like, how are they going to go on a roll? How are they going to win four straight? And I think Ryan Day's like, watch us. And Will Howard is like, watch us. And a bunch of Buckeye guys that are going to leave the program having never beaten Michigan. Think about how crazy that is. No gold pants for so many of those players. Could potentially now go down in history. They'll be favorites in the next two games if they're able to beat Texas and then go win the national championship on January 20th. They could go down in the history books as all-time greats. And I do think there's going to be some dudes in Pickerington who are going to be like, yeah, but you didn't beat Michigan. And I think everybody's just got to acknowledge that this is a different landscape altogether now.
Well, welcome to the dark side, Lima, because I'm just kind of, I mean, I'm just coming to terms with that myself. Like, and the landscape being what it is, like, no disrespect to any of those kids, but beating Michigan no longer is, and getting a pair of gold pants, that is no longer the big prize for them. It's getting into the college football playoff and winning a national championship. Like, that's what it's all about now. And it's not just Ohio State, Michigan. It's rivalries all across college football. I mean, and the transfer portal, guys are no longer really committed to programs, so they don't invest in those programs anymore because they're bouncing around. Like, it's a different world, and as I've already said this morning, if you don't evolve, you're going to get left behind, and it's nice to see that in your young age, as a married man and a father, you're growing. I mean, I remember you when you were just a little 12-year-old kid. I'm so proud of you, Lima.
That was last week.
It wasn't that long ago. Yeah. No, this is what's so interesting is that now, you know, we have to look at everything differently. Like, is Ohio State, Michigan, just Cleveland, Pittsburgh, you know, Brown Steelers? Is that what it is where, you know, we can have an amazing victory over Pittsburgh or the Baltimore Ravens and say Super Bowl, Super Browns and get all psyched about it and then ultimately realize, yeah, probably didn't mean all that much to either team because there's a lot more games and now you have the playoffs. Like, the stakes are going to change dramatically from here on out for so many of these games. Now, I will say, as cool as the playoff is going to be, even though there's a bunch of blowouts, it's not always going to be that way. I mean, it kind of is going to mirror what you see in the NFL in the playoff format, where you have some great games and some terrible blowouts. You're going to have great games in cold weather, and then you're going to have, you know, different atmospheres and domes and like yesterday at the Rose Bowl. So that's not going to look all that different from the normal NFL playoffs. But what college football always had going for it is that at the end of the year, the Iron Bowl or Ohio State, Michigan, that would be the end of the other team's season. They'd be demoralized all off season. You would put the counter up at the top of the website. How many days has it been since your rival has beaten you? And all that stuff goes poof right out the window for a very cool playoff, an awesome playoff, more football. Anybody else's family saying, how much more football is there? And I'm like, wife, there are still potentially two more games and then a slew of NFL games. We haven't even finished the regular season. There's going to be a lot more football. But it forces us to all have to pivot on how we always thought about these things.
Well, for the record, it's been 1,860 days since Ohio State's beaten Michigan. But now you're talking contract extension for Ryan Day. Do you go back on that if they lose to Texas? Does it become fire Ryan Day again if they don't get to the title game?
Yeah, I think he saved his job. I think, you know, whether he would have been fired had they lost to Tennessee or whether he just would have pursued other avenues and they would have figured out the financials on that, we'll never know now. And, hey, that's a good thing. You shouldn't want to know that because that would have meant perhaps a huge portal plunge for so many of your players. I don't know, is Jeremiah Smith staying? If Ryan Day's gone, if Hartline takes another job, remember he had interviewed for another job, like, you just don't know what would have happened in those scenarios. And so I didn't think they could go on a run after losing to Michigan. I think a lot of people, look, they're the 8 seed, right? I mean, people are going to look at this on TV. You know, Ohio State's got an 8 next to their name. Like, that is a strange, strange bird, you know, for everybody to try to consider. So I do think that this is going to look, they've been tested. To have to do this, you still have the Texas game, and then who knows? What is it going to be? Penn State? Is it going to be, you know, Notre Dame on the other side of that bracket in Atlanta, you know, on January 20th? I can't believe they're going to be playing college football all the way to the end of January. So this is just a weird, freakish year. We did say all year, like, we can't act like we didn't say all year, that it was a bizarre season. Yet, like, Oregon was the best team. They were unbeaten, but didn't we kind of say for most of the year there were no great, unimpeachable teams? There weren't those Georgia, those Alabama teams, the Ohio State
teams. It was supposed
to
be Ohio State. Ohio State was supposed to be that team, and they never were until yesterday.
Right, so I think that's what had a lot of us. Remember, Indiana and Penn State were top five teams, and I was joking with those being the big Ryan Day top five elusive wins he was searching for, and I'm like, are either of those teams really top five? Well, now Penn State, because of their run, they have a claim, you know, a stake at it. This format, because they don't reseed, because we gave the auto bids, you know, to the teams that won their conference, or the auto buys, I should say, it threw everything out of whack for seeding. So the bracket had no integrity whatsoever. At least the NFL reseeds every year. I don't love that the NFL, you're going to see some bizarre scenarios play out in the NFC where you could have two losses all year and somehow, you know, have to play a road game in the first round of the playoffs. That's weird.
What's Mike Vrabel going to do now? Is he crushed? has his dream of coaching the Buckeyes just been crushed?
Who knows? Boy, that the Vrabel thing, like, what is the great job for Vrabel to even want? And, you know, all along people said he didn't want to recruit. And I'm like, what recruiting does he have to do if he's at Ohio State? He just have the GM go handle that and talk to the agents and the runners and just figure out, you know, how much money is left. And here's the other thing I wonder. Like, if Ohio State wins the national championship, what is it, in Atlanta this year?
Yeah.
On January 20th, is somebody somewhere, is Jack Sawyer going to tuck, like, the Michigan flag with him as they travel down there and go plant it at midfield to try to have his last lap on that? Has he got to go find Desmond Howard and get a fight with him and punch him in the face? Like, what exactly is the new world we're living in?
It's weird because that game will never mean what it once meant. And I'm not saying that it doesn't mean anything, because it will still mean more than the other regular season games, but it won't mean what it meant 5 years ago. It won't mean what it meant 10 years ago. Like, there would be no other year in the history of college football in which Ohio State could lose two games, one of them being their final regular season game of the year, not play in the Big Ten championship game, and still be able to play for a national title. Like, that has never happened before. This is totally uncharted territory.
Yeah, obviously, C.J. Stroud gave it a run. They had every opportunity to beat, you know, Georgia a few years ago. And ironically enough, last year's Ohio State team gave Michigan the best battle, even with Kyle McCord. And, you know, I'm also thinking, you know, Kyle McCord, like, he ended up having a great bounce back year and was terrific. I think he's petitioning for a fifth year of eligibility to try to stay with Syracuse. And, you know, there's been this, like, rivalry with Buckeye fans because they're not happy about the stuff that was said from Kyle McCord's point of view. And they'll say that he didn't stay and try to compete when, in reality, they took away his NIL money. So he wasn't going to stay at Ohio State if there was no guaranteed NIL. I think people are a little ill-informed on that situation. But can you imagine, like, what if Ohio State team last year had a do-over? What if Kyle McCord and that Buckeye team got another chance? Go back to the Cooper years. You know, that 98 team, which we'll always remember. What if Urban Meyer would have had a mulligan that Ryan Day has been gifted for the 2015 team that had everybody back after they won the championship? So it just will have every fan base in the country of these programs start to think, man, we don't know what we're doing and how to root for our teams anymore other than, hey, your season's not over. If you're in a power conference, you can lose two games, maybe three, and still have a chance to win a national championship.
Are you do you have the collection played out for Jeremiah Smith to keep him in Columbus?
So I brought this up. This is what a big blowout 7 minutes into the game it was yesterday. And I said, what is stopping other teams from at least asking, hey, what if we double what Ohio State's paying? Even if it's a bluff, just to get Ohio State to have to go into their reserves to maybe impact. Like, I don't think people have properly understood what this is going to be like. There are 2,000 kids in the portal. And I saw some people saying, oh, you think his only motivation is to get paid? Doesn't he want to be coached by the best? I'm like, does it matter who Jeremiah Smith is coached by over the next 2 years? Does it matter what school he plays for? Is he not going to be, you know, the first non-quarterback off the board no matter what when he is eligible in a few years? Like, go get your money, right? Isn't that what we're saying about all these kids?
That's what I tell the kids. Get your money when you can get it.
He could not play football for the next 2 years and would still be a top five pick in the draft when he's eligible. Like, that's how just freakishly talented he is.
Yeah, and I get it. It sounds like he loves Ohio State. I wasn't really seriously trying to get people to consider that he would try to bolt because he's unhappy or anything. It's just, we know what it's all about. It's all about money. I mean, that's a big reason why Jeremiah Smith is there to begin with. They were offering him more money than just about anybody else. Yes, the coaching, yes. You know, they become wide receiver U and all of that, and Hartline and Ryan Day, like, no doubt. There's no doubt. But does the coaching at this point, like, what, we don't think Jeremiah Smith would be good if he went to Oregon or Michigan or Georgia or Alabama or Texas A&M or other places that have a lot of money? Sacramento State, it could be anywhere.
That NIL program they have out in Sacramento State is supposed to be serious.
Yeah, 52 million. But so why wouldn't, if you were Jeremiah Smith's agent, parent, whoever is handling him, his mentor, if Jeremiah Smith, wouldn't you come back to Ohio State and say, hey, I'm getting $10 million offers elsewhere? And what would Ohio State do?
They would find the money. Have to do everything they can to make that happen, right? Like, and you can't let this guy leave.
And they'd have to come back to their boosters, to their NILs and say, can we get this up, and can we make sure we can pay everybody else and all those other position rooms?
Yeah, I mean, that's the new reality that we live in the college football world. It's never been like this. The regular season games have never mattered less, and the money has never mattered more.
Is this better? I want to know from college football fans, is this better? Because I made the case for years that the old system, the BCS, it did a great job of determining the best team, because very rarely did we leave the college football season and say, that team wasn't the best team. No, it was almost perfect every year in determining a champion. And the rivalry games mattered, and there wasn't NIL, and there wasn't transfer portal hopping, new quarterback every year. Ohio State's going to have a new quarterback again next year. It'll be like six of the last 8 years Ohio State has a new quarterback. But like, which realm of college football do fans prefer? And I think people fall in love with the playoff, but is this really what you want? Because remember, the NIL, the conference hopping, it all made the money part of this good for everybody. Everybody was just going to be like, fine. Let kids have some money. But is this the sport that you fell in love with? And is this the sport that you can continue to love down the road? And that is the question I think we will find out over guys like Dan Wetzel. They say you will. They say, look at the ratings. Look at the stadiums. People are going to watch this no matter what. And they might be right because we love football. But it is a lot. It is dramatically different from anything we've ever experienced.
I think because as a society, we love football so much, like we're going to be able to sell it as, yeah, this is better, but I don't think that it is. Like, I am of the belief that when you have the type of season Ohio State had, where let's be real, they underachieved throughout most of the season. The loss to Oregon is fine, but then losing at home to a Michigan team, I think that should end their season. And instead, they're probably going to win the national title. I don't know how that sits with me.
All I know is this. We have two teams in the Buckeye State that are the best in what they do right now and are pretty incredible, and I cannot wait to see what happens with Ohio State. And obviously, your Cleveland Cavaliers.
Have you been allowed to stay up late while they've been out west? Have you been allowed to watch these games or no?
There is a lot of DVRing, a lot of watching the next day.
This is the one time where Lima's actually volunteered to do the night feeding.
Yeah, this is the most disappointed 27-year-old Anthony Lima has ever been in his future self.
It stinks. It stinks because if you are missing the Cavs, if you are not able to take advantage of this perfection, I mean, they should be talked about like the Golden State Warriors in 2015 that were coming up. I mean, this is what they're doing. They have perfected. I know the ethical basketball thing is something. I mean, what is not to like about this team? Remember, they check off all the boxes. They have a lot of Americans on the team. That seems to be something people care about nowadays. They have a superstar who seems egoless. They all play the right way. They're not foul merchants. On a given night, they do shoot a lot of threes, but on another night, they can attack you different ways. They play defense in a regular season. They compete hard. They're deep. Why is this team not an American storybook type team?
I love the fact that they're not being talked about a lot nationally. I will never complain anymore about quote-unquote disrespect from the national media, but you're right. They should be the headline story in the NBA this year with what they're doing.
And yet, Daryl, I feel like in a weird way, I told Ken this a week ago, I've never wanted a regular season to continue forever and then simultaneously end immediately so we get to the playoffs.
Yeah, 100%.
Only bad things can happen the longer the season is.
Yeah, I think that's a fair place to be. But, Anthony, thanks for waking up early and joining us here on your own show today, man. Appreciate it.
Been up since 5:30. Thank you.
Wow, look at you. There he is. Anthony Lima joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. A lot of good stuff from him. Daryl, the Cleveland Cavaliers not in action tonight, but they are back in action Friday as they wrap up their four-game West Coast trip with a game in Dallas against the Mavericks. Mavericks won't have Luka Doncic, but the Cavs 3-0 on this trip so far with a couple of wins earlier this week over the Golden State Warriors and the Los Angeles Lakers. And it's not just that the Cavs are beating teams. It's that the Cavs are absolutely dismantling teams. So far this year, they're 29-4. 21 of those 29 wins are by 10 points or more. There are only five other teams in basketball that have 21 wins. I do think we're at the point now where it's probably time to have a conversation about raising the expectations for this team.
I can't believe that. Look, when they hired Kenny Atkinson, I expected things to be better. I did not expect them to be on the pace that they're at, where, to your point,
72 wins.
They're just annihilating teams. They're breaking their backs. It's and they don't play the same style every night. They're not just a team that every night they go out there, they chuck 53s, and that's how they're winning. Because if that's how they're winning, we could legitimately sit here and say, well, a little bit of a fluke here. This is not a fluke what they're doing. Not by any stretch of the imagination. I'm really looking forward to the two games coming up against the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Those are going to be awesome.
They have opened up I think they got a 1.5 game lead on the Thunder for best record in the NBA, but they've got a 5-game lead on the defending champion Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference. They're running away with the top seed. My only concern, actually I have two. I don't want to say one because I just don't want to put it in the ether. I don't want it out there.
Well, I mean,
I think you know what I'm thinking about.
But that's a concern with every team.
Right. Every team deals with it. But my only concern is that I'm reminded of the lesson that LeBron James learned here, his first stint with the Cavaliers. After making the NBA Finals, they became obsessed with their seed. That they had to win as many games as possible in the regular season to get as high of a seed as they possibly could to get home floor advantage and whatnot, right? So you didn't have to go on the road and win in the play. Then LeBron got to Miami and figured out, nah, you know what? We need to save our energy for the playoffs so that we have what it takes to get to the finish line. And I mentioned this because I'm about to talk out of both sides of my mouth, because I think Kenny Atkinson's doing a brilliant job managing minutes of guys. He's not burning Donovan Mitchell 42, 43, 44 minutes a game, right? He's not doing that to Darius Garland. So I think that from that standpoint, they'll be okay from an energy standpoint. I'm just, I don't know, maybe I'm living in my fears a little bit, but I'm a little worried that if you get obsessed with piling up the regular season wins, that what happened to the 2015-2016 Golden State Warriors that won 73 regular season games will happen to the Cavaliers.
Okay, but so here's the thing with the seeding aspect of things. It's not as if they've become obsessed with winning these regular season games, because I know that you're at Brown Stuff and you've not been at every Cavs game so far. You've been at a decent chunk of them, but you're in that locker room. Like, you know what's going on. They speak about this as just trying to build the right habits, and that they're just trying to do things the right way. And they happen to be winning by doing those things.
I think
they
Donovan says that after every game, too. Like it's becoming a little bit of a broken record. And I don't mean that as a criticism or a negative, but like Donovan says the same thing pretty much after every game. Like, you know, winning is important, but we want to make sure that we are laying a solid foundation. And sometimes the final score, you know, you can lose a game and still play well and be happy with how you play.
And you can win games. Like, for instance, the first game they lost this year, that game in Boston to the Celtics where they lost by 3. I think that the Cavs walked away from that one. I was in the locker room that night in Boston. Like, the Cavs walked away from that happy with the way they played. They were undermanned. They were missing 4 of their 11 rotation players. Ball just didn't bounce their way that night.
Which, by the way, that's how it was in the conference semifinals. They were undermanned.
Right, but that Boston team was much better than them.
I understand.
Where this Boston team is not. Like, I think that the Cavs proved we're on that level that night. Where I don't think there was anything. They were undermanned. They didn't have Donovan. Caris LeVert was injured. Jared Allen didn't play. None of that mattered. They were not going to win that series. Would it have been longer? Maybe, but they were not going to win that series. That world did not exist last year.
They just couldn't give them their best shot. That's my
totally
point.
Totally fair.
That's the point I'm trying to make.
But this year, they've become such a great team while keeping the process in mind. It's not about we have to find a way to win on Tuesday night in Los Angeles against the Lakers on the second night of a back-to-back. It's about we have to play well because we need to keep growing. We have to keep getting better. And if you look what they were the month of November compared to what they were in the month of December, like, so many people thought nationally, I'm not saying locally, but nationally, this was certainly a thought that, oh, it's a fluke. The Cavs are going to cool off. It's because they're just off to such a torrid offensive start. Like, they were just so hot at the start of the season offensively.
And some people actually thought the schedule was friendly to them when, like, they played the most games of any team in the league.
People thought that regression was coming. Well, they were actually better in December than they were in November
and
October.
Yeah, they went 12-1.
Well, not even just, like, record-wise, but if you look at offensively, they were a better offense in December than they were in November. Defensively, they were kind of bad. They were 20th in the NBA in November on defense.
Yeah.
They were 3rd in December. Like, they have, Daryl, I think the look of an elite team. There is a comparison going around that bothers me a little bit, but they have a look.
Oh, you don't like the Warriors comparison?
No. That's the one I love. It's the Atlanta Hawks comparison that people are making. Well, people are trying to say that they are the 2014-15 Atlanta Hawks. That's wrong. They are the 2014-2015 Golden State Warriors. That is the closest comparison. I've done a lot of digging on this. That is the closest comparison I can find. The Cavs are that Warriors team, the first Warriors title team that won 67 games and beat the Cavs in six games. And you could say, well, the Cavs got hurt, and that's fine and true, and I do believe that to an extent. But that doesn't mean that Warriors team wasn't awesome. Well, this Cavs team is awesome.
And the Hawks are the Cavs' kryptonite. Like, they're the one team.
I just think they played bad. I really do.
They just, for whatever reason, played their worst basketball games against the Hawks. I don't know why.
I think they had two bad games. I don't think there's anything to look into with that. I really don't.
Okay.
I would not worry about the Atlanta Hawks. Like, the Atlanta Hawks have a very weird win profile. I would not worry about that. I think the Cavs just had a couple bad games. Like, there are, I think, two other teams.
Well, then my request is going to be, can we have the bad games maybe against another team in the league?
I mean, maybe. We'll see.
Go out and boat race the Hawks.
Here's the thing, too. The next time they play Atlanta, they're going to lose.
Yes.
Well, no. So the next time they play Atlanta, they play in Miami the night before.
Oh, geez.
There's no way they're going to win in Miami and against Atlanta at home. Like, that, it's a scheduled loss. They could be 0-3 against the Hawks, but it doesn't matter. Like, what matters is, the Cavs are on, they are in the top tier of the NBA right now.
That South Beach flu is real, by the way.
Well, it is, and having to, Miami to Cleveland back-to-back is not an easy trip. There are some that are more difficult that happen pretty frequently in the NBA, but that is a tough back-to-back. But the Cavs are in the first tier of the NBA, and the only other two teams that they should be talked about with are OKC and Boston. Like, that's it. That's the whole conversation. I do think that we're at the point now where, you know, I don't know where you were before this season. I thought that getting to the Eastern Conference Finals should be the bar for success. I think that bar has been raised. Like, I don't think that is a successful season at this point.
Well, I don't like speaking in absolutes when you're talking, because just anything can happen when you get into playoffs. But I will say this, that anything less than conference semifinals would be a massive disappointment.
Well, conference semifinals would be losing in the first round, and there's no doubt that that would be an epic failure.
Right. Well, even the not advancing past the conference semifinals, I would be disappointed, especially considering the way this team has played. I never like to say that your season is not a success if you can't get back, if you don't make the NBA finals or win the NBA championship. I don't like saying that in any sport, because just I've covered so many playoff teams over the years, not named the Cleveland Browns, where you know, you have a front row seat and you see how difficult it is night in and night out and to advance. But there's no question this team has the talent capable of winning an NBA championship. That I am convinced of now. I wasn't convinced of it last year. I wasn't convinced of it when Kobe Altman decided to give everyone contract extensions this offseason and run it back. I wasn't convinced of it when they hired Kenny Atkinson. I thought it'd be better. But I wasn't sure where the missing piece was to get them to that level, Danny. They don't have I'm hearing wing defender. They need wing defenders. Okay, great.
They have five of them.
Right. Like, I mean, I for the first time am convinced that this team is good enough to win an NBA championship.
Sometimes you just need a fix.
FML, my life.
My life.
FML, fix my life.
Danny, what do we do?
Fixing lives.
My life.
Being out in the wild and coming into contact with strangers is always something that you were told about as a child to try and avoid.
Darryl. Stranger danger.
Stranger danger is the phrase that comes to mind. And now in the internet age, the year 2025, that has been accentuated in some aspects, and in others, it has been normalized a little bit. I believe you've been in contact with a few more strangers than you'd like. Is that correct?
Well, I'm conflicted right now.
Okay, tell me why.
So, I keep getting Facebook and LinkedIn requests from people that I just don't know, have no association with whatsoever. Never met them, never worked with them, never taught them. They're not related to me. And I've been denying the requests.
Ooh.
And I'm wondering if that makes me a jerk or something else. Because my thing is, my Instagram is public.
Mm-hmm.
My X is public. My Blue Sky is public. I feel like that.
Well, it's all part of what you do
right.
professionally.
Like I feel you that
are,
I
those
have
are not your personal accounts, quote unquote.
Right.
They are your professional accounts.
They're front facing accounts, right?
Yes.
So I feel like I have enough of a public social TikTok too. Like I feel like I have a perfectly acceptable level of public facing social media that I don't feel the obligation to add people that friend request me on Facebook or to quote unquote connect with people on LinkedIn that send me requests that are not in the broadcasting field that I've never worked with. Does that make me a bad person that I'm deleting and declining these requests?
No, I don't think so, because I do think that those are, you know, private accounts if you want them to be. You have every right.
Like my
for
life
them
is
to
not
be,
that
so.
Exciting. You don't need to see
I agree,
what I'm
yeah,
doing
right,
every day on
right.
Facebook, right?
So I think LinkedIn and Facebook are different in this aspect too, because there are people that I will accept connections from on LinkedIn, and I'm not a big outside of my Twitter and my Blue Sky, like I'm just not a big social media person. And 95% of what I do on social media is the sports stuff. It's the Cavs stuff. Like that's what I do because that is my job. Like that's how I make my living. So yes, that stuff is very important to me. I have a Facebook account. I have not checked my Facebook account in many, many, many months. Like I don't know who has requested me to be friends. I've not accepted because I haven't checked LinkedIn.
Now, I think I know your problem. I think you've picked the wrong friends to start off with. I know this has happened to me, and I know exactly who's to blame for it, and he's at home right now, and he's not on this show that has his name on it. Ken Carman has accepted friend requests from everyone in the greater Cleveland metropolitan area.
I know. He's
so
like,
now, and
the expectation is that I'm supposed to do the same thing.
Not only that, but they have these suggestions for who you should be friends with, right?
Oh, yeah.
And because he is friends with people who you have not met, and I'm sure he's met them in passing somewhere out at a training camp or something. They yelled at him, but he has now linked you to them. Ken took my friend request.
So here's the solution.
Because I've had the same problem.
Just
Darryl.
Say no.
You need to block Ken on Facebook.
No, I can't
That's
do that.
That's the solution.
I can't do
That's
that.
That's the only way.
No, I can't. I
That's
can't do that.
That's what you have to do.
Here's the thing. I can't remember.
It's time to cut ties with some of those friends, Darryl.
Mostly Ken.
I have.
Mainly.
I can't remember the last time I actually sent a friend request to somebody on Facebook. Because my philosophy is, you don't want to be my friend, it's fine. Like, if you want to be friends with me, I'm here. Like, I'm not bothering people. Owen had to friend request me.
I did, finally. It's only been like a month or two.
Yeah.
And I've known Darryl for a long time.
And Owen has showed up on my...
Congratulations, guys.
No, I mean, Owen has showed up on my suggested friends for like the last 5 years.
You know why? Because he's friends with Ken.
That's probably why. But like, That's I'm just
exactly
like,
why.
Yeah, I work with Owen, but like, Owen probably doesn't give two you-know-whats about like my Facebook, so I'm not going to...
better myself.
I'm not going to, you know, bother the guy. And then out of the blue, I'm like, Owen friend requested me? Okay,
right.
I work with him. He's a cool dude. Okay, even though he's a Chiefs fan. Okay, no problem. But he was a Chiefs fan before
That's
Patrick
true.
Mahomes got there and Travis Kelce got there and Andy Reid got there. But yeah, I just feel guilty. I did it again this morning. I had two friend requests. I didn't
Wait,
know that,
why do you feel guilty?
I don't know. I feel like I'm just being...
What do you... I don't understand feeling guilty about this.
I
understand being annoyed that your inbox is
nope,
flooded with
it's
requests.
It's not annoyed. I'm annoyed that I feel guilty. That's the root of the problem.
I don't understand feeling guilty.
That
is what
bad.
Does not make sense to me.
You're
like,
annoyed
I feel,
by your conscience?
Yes.
Well...
Yes.
When I decline somebody, whether
Booze,
it's on Facebook,
buddy.
LinkedIn... I feel no shame when I say no. I'm very quick to hit that X button.
Now, I'm not going to lie. I
no,
have gotten
you.
Some friend requests that I've denied, and I felt really good about denying them. I'm not. There have been
deny.
A select few.
I
you just let
them.
It sit?
They
you let
sit
them linger? hang out in purgatory on Facebook. Yeah.
Okay, so I feel so. I'm not being a jerk.
I don't understand why you would feel guilty.
Okay,
that's,
that I'm doing
that's
this.
That's what doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I just kind of feel like if I don't know you, haven't worked with you, we're not related. Yeah, you don't need to know my personal business on Facebook, even though I basically have no personal business on Facebook.
Yeah, I wouldn't feel guilty. That's the thing that does not make sense to me at all.
And if you're like a car salesman in Alabama, I have no reason to connect with you on LinkedIn. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that I get a lot of those. It's just I say no to almost every time. But getting back to the Cavs, Daryl, they play on Friday night in Dallas to wrap up this four-game West Coast trip. They've gone 3-0, three really impressive wins, three double-digit wins, three teams that they have now beaten twice this season in Denver, Golden State, and Los Angeles. What's been the most impressive part of this trip for you?
I just think the way that they are breaking team spirits. Like, you can see it in the fourth quarters. You know, take the Laker game, for instance, right? LeBron had just turned 40. Everybody's talking about that. Obviously, we know his history, with the Cavaliers. And they just basically snapped the Lakers in half. And it felt so effortlessly. Just watching this. That's the other thing that amazes me about this team, Danny, is it feels effortless. And I realize saying that is almost disrespectful to what they're accomplishing.
Right.
But that's what it feels like to me, that this, to your point earlier, this is who they are. This is what they are. And they can morph into just about any style that's required. Okay? I mean, there are times where, you know, Kenny's not afraid to pull Jared Allen off the floor mm-hmm. and just leave Evan Mobley out there.
That's when they're at their best, actually.
You know, And Jared doesn't pout about it. You know, he's not throwing tantrums in the locker room after the games, right? It's a very unselfish group of guys who are, I think, self-motivated and driven. I don't think that they need Kenny Atkinson every night to get up there and give him a win one for the Gipper speech to get him fired up to play. They just effortlessly and naturally go out there and beat the crap out of whoever they're playing.
They dominate whoever they play. The effortless thing, like, it feels, Daryl, as if they are always, and this gets me back to that first Warriors championship team, it feels like they're always three possessions away from either taking a 9-point lead if the game is tied or pushing their lead out 9 points further and ending the game. Like, it feels like...
And we've seen that, and we've seen them do both.
Yes.
A home game a couple weeks, it was a 3-point, actually it was a 1-point game and a 3-point game with like 90 seconds to go, and the Cavs ended up winning by 12. Like, and that was just with 90 seconds
Look at the Warriors game on Monday night. They were up by 5, 11 minutes and 43 seconds left in the third quarter.
And Draymond Green was trying to do some Draymond Green stuff.
And then the next 3.5 minutes, they go on a 22-2 run, and the game is over.
We call that a cavalanche.
That stuff happens all the time.